okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 121 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. With me on the line, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good, although you'll have to forgive me tonight if the brain is just a little dead, because I've been teaching a photography workshop all day.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if I decide somebody to... you'll know why. Because, I do about a two-hour lecture almost nonstop in the morning, break for a bit of lunch, organize the model, and then spend the afternoon, you know, teaching all the things that I've talked about in the morning. So I come back and, you know, as much as I love doing these workshops, and I do, and I hope I never stop,
yeah,
they are tiring because you're just,
teaching,
speaking, giving all day. And look, I'm a beautiful giving person. There's no doubt about it. I am. I'm an exceptional human being. But, you know,
even if you say so yourself.
Oh, well, nobody else flaming does, you know. So I wanted to let you know that, you know, I've given of myself all day. Here I am giving of myself again. Give, 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 give. That's all I ever seem to do. So if tonight I'm a little bit, you know, a little bit slow on the uptake, you'll have to understand that I have every reason.
So what was the workshop today?
We did a creative people photography workshop today.
Excellent.
Which, yeah, I really enjoy doing that one because while it's about people and, you know, specifically people in you know, everyday circumstances, window light and, you know, how to work with good light, bad light, how to pose for the light, etc. There are so many areas, avenues of, you know, photography in which the principles could be applied.
Okay.
So people get a lot out of it because we talk about depth of field, we talk about lens perspective, which is very important in people photography.
Mm-hmm.
And so many other, you know, they get to see that these are principles that they can carry across into so many other realms of their, you know, their photographic interest. So I really enjoy teaching it. And at the end of the day, when we are all sitting down once again after we've done our morning session, done our afternoon shoot, the end of the day is always great as I go around the room again talking about what we've learned. And people always come up with these interesting things that they've picked up, and usually everybody's had an interesting or a different take on the day. You know, they personally have taken something different that the person next to them has because they came with a different need, and so that's what they were searching for. So, you know, I think that it's very rewarding for me, and I know that it's very rewarding for those who come because they go home with pictures they never thought they could take, and they also go home with the knowledge that, you know what, really? It's not that hard, you know. What do they say about anything? If you know how to do it, it ain't that hard.
Yeah,
and that really is the whole basis of this. That once you know how to do it, and the doing is not that difficult. It isn't that. It is, you know, getting great photographs of people if you know how to meter and if you know how to, you know, pose for the light and those kinds of things, and just understand the principles. Once you've got those basic things up and running, it ain't, you know, brain surgery. It really isn't.
Yeah. I think a lot of creative pursuits are like that to a certain extent. Once you understand, you know, the theory behind the creative process, you know, in whatever field it is,
yes,
the actual doing becomes quite easy.
Yeah. One reason that years ago I wanted to start a photography magazine was that I felt that there were some magazines which, when you read them, made everything feel unachievable.
Right.
You know, and so they would do bios on some of the great leading photographers and, you know, photographers who just hop on a plane at a moment's notice to go and photograph some supermodel in Tuscany. Oh, yes, another day at the office. And you're reading this and thinking, you know, oh, man, you know, what a great life, you know, and I'll never be able to do that. And then there were other photography magazines that deal with the acerebral among us. In other words, they believe that, you know, we're all stupid and we can't learn anything. And so the editorial, I think, is just empty and uneducational, uneinspiring,
and
unmotivational. Too dumbed down. Or, you know, it's some travel log. I went to China Mm-hmm. And I took these photos. First of all, we went to Beijing. Beijing is a very big city, and we found ourselves walking through Tiananmen Square. And you're thinking, is this a photography magazine? Or is it a travelogue? Or is it a blog of some kind? I want to know. See that photograph? I want to know how to take that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that motivated me, fired me up to go into publishers with my idea for a magazine was that I wanted to be able to tell people to say, hey, you know what? Look, if I can do it, flaming heck, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And it ain't that hard. And that's one thing that I really tried to drive home today to all those who were in attendance, that once you understand the basic principles and you've got a few tools in your toolbox, you can do this. It really isn't that hard. And by the end of the day, I think I had them all convinced because they'd all done it. You know, they had all done it with a little bit of help or maybe by themselves, because there are various experience levels and knowledge levels sure. that come to a workshop. And, you know, they all come up to me and they'll show me the pictures on the back of their camera. And they're absolutely stoked. And that's a really great feeling for me as the teacher and for them because... Yeah, I don't know whether I told you the story about our 5-minute photographer.com meetup.
No, you were going to tell us about it because I think that had not happened at the time that we last recorded.
Ah, okay. Look, an interesting thing happened. And hello, Mikey, because I know you're going to be listening. There's a fellow, you know, who's on our 5-minutephotography.com website. 5-minutephotographer.com. And a little while ago, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, Mikey, when you read this, but a little while ago, he posted up on our forum that he didn't think that he could ever, you know, reach quite the level of, you know, creativity that he really wanted to, that he loved photography, but he just didn't feel that he could get it right. And we all immediately just jumped on him in the forum. Keep going, Mikey. You can do it. You can do it. You know, don't give it up, man. Don't give it up. And then he came to a meetup. Of all the gang, all the Melbourne contingent of 5-minutephotographer.com. You notice how I keep saying 5-minutephotographer.com?
I have noticed that, yes.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Anyway, he came to a meeting of the Melbourne contingent of notice how I keep saying that, by the way. And down at the Docklands.
You forget, and I have the power of editorial control.
Fair enough. Well, I'll stop saying as often as I should. Anyway, he came to the meetup, and we had a model organized. It's funny because everyone said, oh, why bring a model? We'll just go down and take some photos. But no. Good old Shell. He wants a model. He wants someone to photograph when he gets down there. So I got our model, Lisa O'Hara, a lovely young lady who is just so nice. And she turned up, and Mikey was immediately ready to take pictures because I think he's found that, you know, maybe landscapes and things isn't his thing.
Right.
So I set the model up. I found the light, put her in it, and I said, Mikey, try this. The light was rubbish. It was an awful day. We had overcast. You know, it wasn't rubbish. It was just, you know, there was nothing to it. It was soft, cloudy, gray clouds. It was a cold day, and there was nothing to it. So I said, hey, Mike, try this. Put on your 85, which you'd already done, and point the lens this way. Put Lisa in the far left of the frame, la, la, la. And I said, now, set it on manual, set it to 2 stops under, and let me hold the flash for you. And I did some off-camera flash work for him. Well, he took this picture after I'd gave him the step-by-step instructions. He took this photograph, bang, off the flash went, camera fires, you know, and he just holds the camera down. He looks at the back of his camera. And all of a sudden, this picture came up that just blew his wig, right? He was frothing at the mouth with excitement, and he just grabs me, and he's a big fella, our Mike. He's 6'4", and he's about you and me put together, right? Okay. He's just a big guy, right? He's a big, gentle giant, our Mikey. And he just grabs me and gives me this big hug, you know, and says that he never believed that he could take a picture like that. And then from then on, man, he was on fire.
Awesome.
He grabbed Lisa and he was setting her up and posing her and Lala doing all this and it was wonderful, wonderful to see that he had found his moment, his epiphany and his niche for that, you know. And yeah. I think since then he's realized that maybe I'm not going to be a landscape photographer as I thought I would, but maybe people will be my thing. Well, today he was at my Creative People Photography Workshop. And he was on fire. And again, it was Lisa, the same model, so they knew each other. And he was really, really enjoying it. So, you know, it really, I don't know why I started telling this story. Can you remember why I started telling this story?
You started off the podcast saying that you'd had a big day doing this.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just gone on from there.
So. Okay. And I'm just, I told you my brain was just going to be a little bit, you know. But it was a wonderful thing for him to see, and he's found that maybe the thing that he, you know, was thinking he would be best at was not it at all, because he really does understand people, and he, you know, he loves the whole concept of photographing different kinds of people, and that, you know, is a lesson in itself. Now he's realized that it ain't that hard. It isn't, you know, the principles are fairly straightforward, you know, and once you've got a list of tools in your pouch and your toolbox and whatever of, you know, you understand lens perspective, you understand depth of field, minimal, you know, a maximum, whatever, you understand the benefits of a longer lens over a shorter lens, maybe for portrait work, you understand the find the light and put a minute principle, you understand that then you have to walk the arc around your subject to see where the best place for you to photograph your subject would be, you know, simple tools. Once you've got these in your toolbox, you just pull them out. And then as you shoot more, you'll add more tools, so that no matter what situation you find yourself in, you've always got a tool to pull out and go, yes, I can make this a great photograph. And that's all I really do at workshops, is give people some simple tools that they can go out and use, realize that they, you know, they've gathered a real good core or base of understanding, and then just build on it from there. And I really enjoy that. I would, anybody who's listening to this podcast and doesn't think that a workshop is worth its money, I would disagree. In the larger sense, if it's a good photographer, a good teacher, a good mentor, you know, someone who's got, you know, who's able not only to photograph but able to impart information in a way that doesn't intimidate or knock your brains out, you know, go to that workshop and you'll come back rejuvenated, educated, and ready to, you know, start a whole new thing. You know, it really is a wonderful thing. I want to go to more workshops, but I can't because I'm busy running the thing. But I would love to be able to go to more workshops, you know, and seminars and things like that, to keep myself, you know, always on the lookout, always with a new vision, always with some level of interest and passion. I don't think it's going to die in me too quickly. But you keep doing the same thing over and over again, and that's the trap you can fall into.
You know, well, if I can play the voice of the listener, there are probably listeners who are thinking, why the hell would Shelton, of all people, need to go to a workshop? Because, you know, you already take such stunning photographs.
Thank you.
And I would say to that I can absolutely totally understand where you're coming from. I've been an audio engineer for 22 years, but I still love learning from people with more experience than me. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I get, you know, emails all of the time, as probably you do regarding photography, I get emails from listeners to my other two podcasts, which are all about audio, you know, who are constantly thanking me for sharing my knowledge on audio and things like that.
Yes.
Yet at the same time, I absolutely love talking to other audio engineers, particularly ones who have been in the industry, you know, another 20 years longer than I have. So I can totally understand where you're coming from when you say you'd like to do, you know, workshops as well.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I would, you know, there's always something to learn, man. There's always something to learn. I mean, I look at, you know, fellas that I look up to, the work of Jerry Gihonis and Jurvant Zanzanian as wedding photographers. You know, I look at the work of brilliant landscape photographers that I would love to emulate. And so many that you meet and you think, wow, what a vision. I'd love to. And I'm never going to have that vision because that's unique to them. But I can take some of how they think, and I can put it in my own recipe and come up with a whole new avenue, a little bit of a sidestep perhaps, on what I do already. No one is ever going to be able to be anybody else, and neither should we aspire to be. But I do admire the work of other photographers and think, wow, I'd love to be able to shoot like that. Now, I'm not going to be able to shoot like that because that's their vision, but I can take their principles with me and I can apply them in how I see. So you never, ever stop learning. And, you know, there's never, I've learned from people who are, you know, 20 years behind me in terms of photography experience, and I look at their vision and think, wow, boy, I wish I'd had that 20 years ago. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
That's fantastic. And I think it's a good idea to always have that perspective on yourself. You know, that it's humility. It's essentially, it's just humility, and I'm not real good at humility, but it's difficult for me, okay? But essentially, you always have to admit that there's something to learn and that you want to learn, and opening yourself up to that is your first port of call. And that's why I love the people who come to my workshops. Most of them are happy to admit that they've really learned something, they are, you know, or they really want to learn something, and their minds are just sponges and they're ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, really, it's wonderful. So, like I say, if you are listening to this and you haven't done a workshop hands-on, I'm not talking about sitting at a seminar, but going to a workshop where you get to shoot, where you get the photographer next to you who says, look, try this, do that, do this, give that a go, you know. That is a real experience. I never had that when I was younger. I've worked with other photographers and learned from them on the job, but I never had that when I was younger and starting off, and damn it, I wish I had. There are so many workshops around now that it wouldn't be difficult for you to find something, you know, on your topic, in your area, if you live near a major city where a photographer is running a workshop about something. But make sure that his work is better than yours, in your opinion. If it isn't, then there's no point really going, because you'll go through the day perhaps with a bit of an attitude, and that would be understandable. So have a look at his work, have a look at her work, the website, whatever it is that have a look at that and say, well, I really want to learn how to do that, and then just go and do it. Mikey, now I hope you don't mind me dobbing you in again, Mike, but he was against doing workshops because, well, my workshops aren't that expensive. You can come for the whole day and you get, you know, catered. It's, you know, you get, you know, your lunch, you get model, you get photograph a model, you get tuition, and the whole thing's under $200,
yep.
Which isn't bad for a day's workshop.
No, not at all.
And, of course, that's Australian dollars. So if you come over from America, it's about 73 cents or something. Right? His argument was that he would rather spend that money, because he doesn't come by $200 easily, he'd rather spend that money on a lens or another piece of equipment. To which I responded, well, what's the point of buying something you really don't understand the benefit of? Why don't you go to a workshop, learn why and how you need to use that piece of equipment, and then, you know, when you get it, you'll rock it. Or maybe be as a result of the workshop, for which you've paid the same amount of money as you could buy a cheap lens for or something, you'll realize that it's not the lens at all, but you can work with what you've got to achieve the photographs you want to take. And I think that a workshop is very rarely a waste of money.
Thing is, you could always take the knowledge you pick up at a workshop and turn that into an income, which would then allow you to buy the extra lenses you wanted in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, well, valid point. A lot of people come to my wedding photography workshop, and, you know, at the end of the day, they are able to take with them, you know, the principles that they would require to get through a wedding day. You can never really just turn, you know, go to one day as a workshop and expect to become a professional wedding photographer. But if they already have some level of experience, and they then back that up with, you know, some of the finer points at a workshop, they certainly can. Fellow who came to my workshop on Saturday, just gone, lovely guy, and he said to me in a message he sent to me via Flickr mail, he said he'd been second shooting at weddings for a long time, and he said, I learned more in one day at your wedding photography workshop than I did in 12 months of shooting.
Wow.
Which, you know, I'm reading that, and that's rather humbling, and you sort of think, boy, how do you respond to that with any level of gratitude that will give him an idea of how
much it meant to you to read it.
Yeah, how complimentary and how much it meant to me to read that. But at the same time, I'm deeply honored, but also overjoyed that that's what happened.
Yeah.
So he's, like you said, that $200 that he spent on the wedding photography workshop will save him a lot of learning time. And I'm glad of that. I'm absolutely stoked And I hope he just runs with that ball across the field and, you know, strike gets as many goals for the home team as possible, because he's a heck of a nice guy. I would welcome him to the wedding industry any day. And he does beautiful work, and, you know, he deserves to. So do a workshop, find something about that, a subject that you like, or perhaps find a workshop that's in an arena of, you know, or subject matter that you maybe don't think you're good at, and like Mikey, maybe realize that you are going to be good at it and it really is your thing. I didn't think people were going to be my thing either, but I can shoot pretty much anything and do a fairly good job, but I really enjoy photographing people.
Now, I had an interesting thing happen last week. I got a Facebook message from Andrew Daryl Gungadoo.
Yes.
And he said to me, have you seen this thing on Ken Rockwell's site about if you try to photocopy and print US currency, Photoshop will actually throw up a warning dialogue saying you can't do this, and that Adobe would send all of your personal information to the US Treasury. Now, the minute I saw that, I just went, ah, that's just urban myth for sure. And I wrote back to him and said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
And anyway, he sent me another link. And so I, you know, before I'd even gone and looked at the link, I sent him back another message and I said, dude, I'm about to go and grab a US dollar bill. I'm going to scan it and I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. I sent him a JPEG of a US $1 and US $100 bill. And he wrote back to me again and he said, no, it's not just the scanning. It's when you try and print it. So I said, okay. So I opened up the JPEG again and I then printed the currency off onto a blank sheet of white paper.
Yep.
And then promptly took a photograph of it and then sent him the photo to say, here you go, here's the printout sitting in front of my computer monitor. You can see the image on screen in Photoshop, and in front of the screen is this piece of paper with it printed out. Anyway, it turns out upon further investigation that apparently there is this particular design which is included on the US currency, and it has a particular name. It's called the Urion constellation, E-U-R-I-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a series of five or six circles which are a certain size and at a certain distance and angle from each other, which any imaging program, well, any imaging program which has this Urion constellation anti-piracy, you know, algorithm built into it, of which apparently Photoshop is one, it will detect the presence of that part of the image and basically throw up a warning dialogue if you try and here I think where I came unstuck was that I hadn't tried to crop it to just the currency as if I was trying to genuinely counterfeit the currency. I just photocopied two notes on an A4 sheet. But apparently if you do try and scan it, in color and crop it to the size of the note and then try and reproduce it as if you really were trying to, you know, counterfeit the currency, Photoshop actually throws up this dialogue box that says, no, you can't do that. I was absolutely stunned because the whole thing just sounded like an urban myth to me.
Yeah.
But Andrew sent me through a whole bunch of links, which I will include in the show notes with this episode. It really spun me out because, the whole thing, like I said, just sounded like an urban myth the minute he told me about it. But
you thought Daryl had been in the mushrooms again, hadn't you?
Something like that. But no, apparently it's all for real, and there's a wiki article all about it. And yeah, so for anyone who's interested, I'll include the links in the show notes. You can go and check it out. And Andrew, thank you, or Daryl, thanks for telling me all about that, man, because I'd never heard of it. Not that I'm in the business of counterfeiting currency, so.
Well, not American currency anyway.
No, well, there's no sense counterfeiting ours. It's not worth anything.
No, that's true. Although I imagine ours would be very difficult to counterfeit because of the material on which it's printed.
Well, because of the clear window through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Australian currency has this, a small portion of our banknotes has a clear window that you can actually see through, which has like a hologram in it. So, it is apparently really difficult to try and counterfeit.
Yeah. And of course, it costs you more to counterfeit it than it actually is worth.
Than it's worth,
in value. Only kidding. No, we're doing all right over here. We're doing all right. Well, that's it. And look, thank you, Daryl. It's great to get this kind of feedback. I've put up on my Facebook. Oh, here I am. I said I'm recording. I'm recording the latest, and what should I talk about? And you know, I've had all sorts of silly ideas from people. Thank you. You know, I'm looking for something serious here. But what have I got here? Mikey, of course, just texts me and says, why don't you talk about how awesome your prodigy is? meaning, I presume himself. He denies that, but he presumes himself.
Right.
David Clark tells us to just do crap, crap, giggle, giggle.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of that. Yep.
Then Erin, thank you very much. She says, well, I don't know that someone, but someone has a certain song to sing. Erin, I did that last week.
Oh, somebody hasn't been listening.
Ooh. Yes, that's right. she says, wink. Wink back, Erin King. Right, yeah. It says, I don't know, how about your thoughts on photo manipulation and its place in photography? Then you can follow that with crap, crap, giggle, giggle. David Clark responds with, didn't he sing that last week? Okay.
So we know David was listening.
yeah. Mikey says, and then he comes up, how about directing your model? Now, let's keep these ideas. I love these ideas. I'm going to do this next week when I'm recording. I get on Facebook and get everybody to say, whoa, while you're recording. Because I think what you talk about there, Mike, it must be Mikey Love Week. You know, remember I used to talk about Richard Annable all the time? It's going to be Mikey now. I'm sorry, Richard, but, you know.
You've fallen out of favor, Richard.
Well, no, Richie. Richard has taken, you know that episode, you know, at the beginning of Kung Fu where the old guy says, when you can take pebble from my hand, right? You are free. You know, and you see him take the pebble and he's free to go, right?
Right.
Well, I reckon Richie's taken the pebble from my hand, you see. And so, you know, it's time to move on.
Right.
But Mikey's got a good point about how about directing your model. And this is something that I was talking about today at the... Move on.
Right.
But Mikey's got a good point. You know, find the light and I'd put her in it and, you know, give some instruction. And then everybody would just stand around. Well, not everybody, but a lot of them would stand around and from wherever they were, just take some pictures. And the poor model, Lisa, fabulous girl, Lisa O'Hara, she didn't know where to look, and nobody was giving her any instructions. So I instructed her not to do a damn thing until someone gave her some instructions. Because if otherwise, she makes it too easy for them by doing the pose, doing the face, doing whatever. I just said, just stand there until someone tells you to do something. I don't want you to make it easy for them. Because we seem to know. Well, what's the point, you know?
No, I absolutely agree.
Yeah. What's the point if they're, you know, I mean, it's great to work with a professional model who knows how to pose and la, 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 but what are you going to do when you get, you know, Miss Average, Miss I really just want a nice photo for my boyfriend or Mr. and Mrs. Average on their wedding day and you don't know how to direct them. So I think that's very, very good. Erin, I like your idea on my thoughts on photo manipulation and its place in photography. Erin would raise this because Erin does a lot of artistic photo manipulation and her work is gorgeous. It really is. And I think that's a valid thing we can talk about as well. So keep those ideas coming, folks. But of course, this week the big news is, if you're a Nikonophile like me, that Nikon have released their new little D5000.
Now, what is with the numbering on this thing?
Never clue.
That's just insane. This thing's supposed to sit in between the D60 and the D90, and it's called the D5000.
I would believe, I don't know, maybe they're just running out of...
Bulk purchase discount on zeros.
Hey, maybe that's an idea. Yeah, maybe they did. I don't know. But hey, you got to admit, it's better than the Canon EOS 1DS Mark III.
Yes.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Just name it a flame and give it a new name. I mean, when Nikon bring out the D800 or the whatever, it's not going to be a mark with an S and an X and an asterisk and a wink and a stand on 1 foot. I mean, it's ridiculous. But apparently this little baby, and I haven't actually folded my little hands around it yet because I'm going to Sydney tomorrow. I'm going to be up in your neck of the woods tomorrow to go to the Nikon launch here, catching a plane from Melbourne to Sydney tomorrow to get my little hands on it. But just to run through it, it does, yes, seem to fall between the D60 and the D90, but it has some interesting features. For instance, the articulated screen. It's got this fold-out screen.
Which I will have you know, they stole from Sony.
I would suggest that that's a possibility, yeah. but I think people were doing it before Sony. I think Olympus
were they?
Was doing it before Sony,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And maybe even and Fuji were doing it on some of their bridge cameras well before that. And so it's new to Nikon. It's just not new to, new generally.
Right.
But it's nice that it's interesting that they've done that. It has some interesting things that neither the D90 nor the D60 have. It has, where does it say here? A quiet shooting mode that reduces the mirror cycling noise for quieter shooting in environments where minimal noise is desired. And that's an interesting thing. I would prefer that on a professional camera because you're going to use a pro camera to shoot a wedding in a church. And I'll tell you what, as your camera's clunking away, clunk! It can be a little bit of a disturbance when you're trying to photograph, I don't know, a wedding ceremony or whatever it is that's taking place in a religious venue.
Particularly right in the middle of the vows.
Yeah. 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 I clunk, clunk. Bruce Williams, clunk, 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 take you, supermodel, it's got 19 scene modes. I don't think, flaming heck, we're starting to make the thing that's easy, portrait mode, landscape mode, we're giving them 19 to choose from. That's getting complex, but hey, yeah. I'm gonna have a look at that. I mean, I thought the whole idea of scene modes was to keep it simple, but there's 19 of these things. But it's interesting that they've gone for a higher... this one does shoot high-resolution video at 1280 by 720, which is higher resolution than the D90, which is because, the D90 is 720.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting. It just seems to be, really interesting. It's got inbuilt photo editing under its retouching menu, soft filter, perspective control, color outline, dust reduction system, which for a camera at this entry level is, quite good. So, it could be a nice little camera. I think, naturally, they're just going to send a message to Canon and saying, hey, we're going to be in this price class. And that's essentially what it's got to be all about these days. They have to bring out cameras that, go head-to-head with one another. For a long time, for too long, I believe that Nikon were not doing that, and Canon were bringing out innovations and better imaging systems that, were leaving in many ways Nikon for dead in many ways. And now Nikon have said, come on, we're Nikon, we can't do this anymore. And once they brought out the D3 and then the D700 and the D300, those cameras, I think something must have happened at the board down at Nikon because they changed a whole lot of stuff. And now their cameras are, really leading, I think, for the first time in a long time. Let's see how I'll let you know next week when I come back, from your part of the world, crazy Sydney, and just let you know what I think of the new little thing.
Yeah, I'd be keen to hear it.
They've also released the new 10-24 Nikkor as well for DX crop. So that's interesting. In 35mm terms, it's the equivalent of a 15-36 zoom lens.
Nice.
So for those with D300s, D90s, D5000s even, D60s, D40s, that is going to be a new lens for them, the Nikkor 10-24. So there's a few things happening on that front. I haven't heard anything about... I was wondering whether Fuji would be bringing out a new DSLR by now. But no, apparently there's no news there. Canon have been releasing fairly consistently. But I'm sure there'll be some more coming up. absolutely new SLRs in the future, of course, but in the probably the relatively near future, as these companies keep going head to head and we keep benefiting from all the new technology.
Yeah.
Better, you know, better pictures, better ways to take them.
Of course, a large part of the development cycle for Canon is working out the combination of letters and numbers that will go on the badge.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah. The 5D Mark II. Why don't you just call it a 6D or, you know, a 7D, whatever. I don't know. But just it's just such a mouthful. I find them, you know, I find that difficult. But, hey, you know, they do. That 5D Mark II is just a fabulous camera. So even though it's got a silly name, people are loving it. Yeah. People are absolutely loving it. And just don't take it down to the Antarctic. That's all.
Doesn't perform well in cold weather.
Did I not mention this?
No, I don't think so.
I was reading a post on Luminous Landscape.
Right.
They went down to Antarctica. There was about 70 photographers on this thumping great big workshop that was headed down to Antarctica. And one of the biggest problems was the Canon 5D Mark II. The things were just breaking down left, right, and center.
Wow.
D700s were fine. Other Canons were fine. The D3 was fine. But the 5D Mark II... a large percentage of those who owned them were having some serious issues with the 5D Mark II in Antarctica. I haven't heard anything more on it, but mind you, I haven't had a chance to research it, but it was just interesting. He had no agenda against Canon or anything like that. It was just, hey, this is what happened. I just thought I'd report it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, interesting. Yeah, don't go to Antarctica with it, but otherwise, it's a fantastic camera.
Wow.
You know, and has a lot to say for itself with regard to the D700. You know, it, as a head-to-head camera, there'd be those who say, well, you know, it's not even a, it's well above the D700 in terms of competition. I don't think so. Just because it's got more pixels, I don't think it is. But either way, it's a great, fantastic camera. So.
Well, I bought a new camera last week.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, what'd you get?
It's a video camera.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Do we
talk about this?
We don't normally, but I want to mention it simply because I have you to thank. Because after, you know, 3 or 4 years, however long we've been doing this podcast now, so much of what you have taught all of us about photography has rubbed off on me. And certainly influenced my, I guess, my buying criteria for a video camera. Because, as I've mentioned before, we've had this analog video camera for the last 8 years, which we've hardly ever used. And in the last month, I've sort of sat down and gone through 8 years' worth of footage, which admittedly was only 4 90-minute tapes, but edited it all down into, you know, final videos, and I've burnt DVDs and sort of put all of that to bed. But one of the things that struck me in the process of editing all this video was how often the highlights were completely blown on the analog camera. And so when I was thinking I want to buy a new video camera and it'll obviously be a digital camera, it was, you know, front of mind straight away that whatever I was going to buy, I had to be able to have control over the exposure.
Right.
So there was, you know, that was one thing that I was looking for, and you know, and as a, I guess, a byproduct of that train of thought, I was interested in finding whatever technology was available that would give the best, you know, contrast range within an image. You know, something that could cope with, you know, the widest extremes, you know, in terms of light
dynamics.
Range. Yeah. And so that course of inquiry led me to discover that there are essentially two types of sensor in the video camera world, CCD and CMOS.
Mm-hmm.
And what
interesting, isn't it? Because that's what there is in the still camera world as well.
Well, well, are there many CCD-based still cameras?
Not as much anymore.
No.
Nikon having gone CCD, having gone CMOS, that sort of changed things a bit. But no, true.
Less
than there were.
What I found was that CCD had been the primary technology in the video realm, but of late, most of the manufacturers are moving towards CMOS.
Yes.
And so I started doing some research, and what I found was that CMOS for video is not a better technology. It is merely a cheaper technology.
Okay.
And that the CCD-based cameras offered better contrast, you know, dynamics, you know, dynamic range handling than the CMOS-based cameras. And so I straight away thought, in that case, I want a camera that is 3CCD, not just a single CCD, but a 3CCD camera, because what they do is break up the spectrum of light into red, green, and blue and have one CCD handle each of those color channels.
Yep.
Right. So where a single CCD camera would have to handle the entire spectrum of light on one sensor, a 3CCD design has one sensor, you know, devoted entirely to the red spectrum, one to the green, one to the blue. And then, of course, it was a case of what format does it shoot the video in? And so I did lots of research about that. And yeah, so there was a lot of research done. I spent probably 3 to 4 weeks researching the market and reading bucket loads of websites looking
at
all the different technologies and, you know, what were the pros and cons of each. And honestly, every time you went down one path, you would discover, you know, one new area that you'd think, okay, that's something I need to investigate. And every time, it was like an iceberg. All you had discovered was the 1/9 that was sitting above the waterline, and there was another 8/9 that was out there waiting to be discovered, you know?
So once you start, you cannot stop.
Exactly. So anyway, after a month of investigating, I finally settled on this particular camera. It's a JVC GZ-HD6, and it shoots full high def, 1920 by 1080 pixels. So for those who understand Blu-ray, it's Blu-ray format.
Yep.
16:9 widescreen, and it records to hard drive or SD memory card, and it just has control over everything. You can do manual focus, you can do manual exposure, you can do just about everything on it. It's just a gorgeous camera. So.
Fantastic. And have you, you know, like filmed and seen results? And
yes, I have. I did a little bit of videoing with it over the Easter weekend of Max doing his Easter egg hunt at his nana's house. So I've been editing that up in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And it looks absolutely gorgeous. It really does.
Noticeable difference from, you know, what you've seen before?
Oh, look, chalk and cheese against the analog camera. Absolutely eats it for breakfast.
Fantastic.
So yeah, I'm very happy with it. So yeah, but I just wanted to recount the story only from the perspective that, you know, everything I've learnt from you about still photography and dynamic range and all of those things, they translate just as equally to video as they do to still photography.
Valid point.
And so that was the only reason for wanting to mention it. You know, not trying to change the focus of the podcast.
No, that's a very good point. I haven't sort of looked at anything video for a long time, but I must admit, I wonder whether I would have used my own advice in so doing.
Really?
You've obviously done all. I don't know. I don't think of video the same as I do photography, I suppose. So.
Right.
I wondered whether I would have gone to all that effort. You know?
Well, I guess it comes down to having, you know, if I had edited all of that footage that we'd shot on the analog camera as we had shot it all those years ago, when I didn't know the things that I now know about still photography, thanks to one Shelton Muller, then I probably wouldn't have been dissatisfied with the results that I got.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was all in the last month that I sat down to try and edit that footage, and I'm looking at all these blown highlights, and I'm, you know, throwing plug-in after plug-in after plug-in at these clips of video in Premiere and, you know, trying to salvage this footage and, you know, get some saturation back and you know, trying to multiply layers together to get some of the highlights back and just failing horribly. And I was like, yeah, this is just the same ballpark as photography, really, you know. And so it was something that I was, you know, really aware of when I was looking to buy a digital video camera.
Oh, well, well done. And sorry, what was the model number of the one you got again?
It's a GZHD6.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go, folks.
It is basically the top of JVC's consumer line. Basically, you know, the next step after that, you're into the bottom end of their professional cameras.
Oh, wow. May I ask what the Australian price on it was?
Well, the interesting thing was that I looked on the JVC website and their recommended retail was $21.99.
Mm-hmm.
And I went online and found one of those price comparison websites where you mm-hmm. can, you know, look up all the different stores that have got it. And one of the stores listed was JB Hi-Fi. And so the weekend prior to Easter, I went into a JB Hi-Fi store up at Castle Hill and said, "This is the camera I want. Do you have one in stock?" And mm-hmm. the girl said, "Let me go and check." She went and looked on her computerized inventory thing, and she said, "No, we don't have one." She said, "We've only got two in the state. One of them is in the Sydney store, and one of them is in the Leichhardt store, which is another suburb of Sydney." And I said, "Oh, okay, thanks for that," and walked out. And then on the Monday morning, I rang the Leichhardt store and said, "I understand you've got one and one only GZHD6 camera."
Yeah.
She said, "Let me check." She checked her stock and she said, "Yes, you're right. We do have one and one only." And I said, "What do you want for it?" And she said, "Well, the sticker price is $13.99, but because it's the last one, I'm prepared to do a deal." I'm thinking, hello, it's already $800 off what JVC are saying is a recommended retail, and you're prepared to do me a deal. So so the deal was, I just said to her, I said, "Well, look, I'm prepared to pay the $13.99 if you'll throw in an extra battery for me," which I knew was worth another $100.
And you're bad to the bone. I like it.
And she said yes. So for $13.99, I got the camera and a new battery.
Well done.
So, like a spare battery. So,
yeah.
Because the batteries give you about 80 minutes of recording time. So I figured having a second battery is probably a good investment, you know, because we're, like I said, we got this 3-week holiday at Christmas time where we're going on a cruise for 3 weeks. For 12 days. So having a second battery will probably come in very handy. Because
mm-hmm.
I can imagine that you would, you know, quite possibly shoot more than 80 minutes in a day.
Yeah, probably.
So it'll be handy to have the second battery there.
Well, mate, you'll have to come to India for our photo tour in late October you can do all the video footage and make the documentary.
Oh, mate, I wish.
Nah. I wish I could wangle it for you, but you know, if you're still listening out there, there's a place or two left.
Yeah.
And Heather, if you're still listening, because she's considering it, sure. I'm still waiting on the call there. Okay, I'm still waiting on the call.
Heather Morris?
Yeah.
From Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
That's so, like the exact opposite end of the world from where she is.
Oh, well, I suppose Australia to India, Kentucky to... Oh, it doesn't matter. Wow. We get in a plane. We get in a plane. We watch a movie. We eat some food. We arrive. Just have a sleep if you can. You know, it's like sitting on a bus, except it's better.
It takes longer.
Oh, man, I had to do the bus trip from Melbourne to Sydney once. I will never do that again.
Oh,
it's many years ago.
That's nothing. Mate, I've done it. Brisbane to Perth.
That,
my friend, is torture. 3.5 days nonstop.
Right. Okay.
It's just a horror story. And I have vowed never, ever, ever again.
No.
That was just horrid.
Well, as a photographer, you could perhaps, you know, but no, just get on a plane and do the right thing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, mate. I'm going to go and have a well-deserved cup of coffee, I think.
Good
and I've
on
got.
You, mate.
It's funny, we're talking a minute ago about Mikey, and I'm sitting here, I've got my Facebook open, and he's going, "Oh, mate, I need some help." So,
give some more.
give. Honestly, Mother Teresa ain't got nothing on me, I'm telling you.
"Please, sir, can I have some more?"
Yes.
I'll be known as the good saint, Shelton Muller. Yes, please. The good father.
That's me.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for that.
Hey, Thank you. That's good to be back. Good to be back. We're going to do this as regular as possible, folks. We really are. We really are.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Remember, keep those emails coming in, studio@audiotou.com or shelton@audiotou.com. Or you can buzz either of us on Facebook with ideas for future episodes. We'll keep a note of all of the suggestions, and some of them will even make it into the podcast.
Now, here's something. Yeah, that's right. Here's something you didn't tell me. There's a Shutters Inc. page on Facebook. I got a message saying, how come you're not a member of your own website? And I'm like, what?
It's an Audio To You group. It's not specifically a Shutters Inc. group. It's
right.
An Audio To You group.
Right, now, so there's a piece of information I could have used before I got this message from somebody saying, hey, you're not even on your own damn website. All right. Just thought I'd, you know, let you know.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Future, give me a heads up.
Sorry, so mate.
I can become a fan of my own, you know, podcast. Yeah. So just a thought. Just
excellent. A thought. All right, mate. We'll talk with you next week.
You bet, mate. See ya.
See you later.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio To You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.